doctor, I've got a paper cut. And then he's just like,
the doctor just like, I see you as fuel.
Yeah.
I'm gonna shove you into the warp core, girl. Captain's Pod, Stardate 1112 64.1. I'm still getting used to that new Stardate system. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she sneezed in the transporter buffer and started a ship-wide epidemic. It's Ambassador Danae!
Yeah, you're welcome, everyone. We are now sharing our DNA every time we transport.
To be fair, we always are. Can you imagine, like, to the beam up, back to the ship, and there's a couple of seconds where they have to beep, boop, boop, punch all of the controls in, and then you get a sneeze, and you know, like, just that edge of a sneeze where it's building, and you're like, and it's, like, all in the back of your face, and that's the second that you get transported? Can you imagine how weird that would feel, just be suspended, like, just pre-sneeze?
Suspended in the chew. Not the just, app part.
Yeah, the... yeah. Imagine they put you on the pad and just like, oh, we're not going to dematerialize him because he's mid-sneeze. Everyone needs to evacuate. This is going to... His lungs are going to explode.
Any sort of body function that allows a release factor,
yes.
And you're just right on the edge. Like, you're edging a sneeze, you're edging a fart, you're edging an edging... of other things.
Yep, all of those things.
I don't know why. Yep. I want to censor myself with you know, no, orgasm.
Yep.
This is an R-rated show.
There
I'm talking
is,
to adults.
Way.
If you're a child, please turn to your parent
Stop
and
now.
Say, this is too much.
I judge thee. Yeah, what is all of these things? And then when you said, like, mid something, I then immediately imagined, what if you, like, snuck out a sneaky fart just before you transport?
That's what I'm saying.
But would it then have, like, a separate transporter beam for the fart? Because it's like, it's part of it, just such a giveaway. It's like, you did it again. You couldn't have done it before or wait until afterwards. You had to fart mid-transport.
Were you told when you were a kid that if you peed in the pool, it would turn out to be green?
Yeah, because they put a chemical in the pool to
Which
out
is such
you.
Bullshit.
I don't, is it? I assume
oh,
that was,
yeah.
That seems logical to me. That seems like, kid peed in the pool, we need to know.
No. No.
Is that not real?
No.
God, I'm never swimming ever again.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, like, I feel like, first of all, here's how I know the answer is no confidently, because mm-hmm. I went ahead and peed in the pool, and I watched, and there was nothing.
You monster. Why would you risk that? Why would you, bring, like, a little cup with you and just test it first?
So, in your reality,
yes.
You want, like, 8-year-old Danae to go retrieve a cup,
yes.
Pee in it,
yes.
Take it to the pool, and then
yes.
Do my own test. So in your
yes.
reality, I'm coming out of the bathroom holding my own piss in a cup.
Yes.
And that's
correct.
Less embarrassing than just releasing a little bit in the water
yeah,
to see what
juice.
Happens.
You got a cup of apple juice or water if you're uh-huh. properly hydrated.
Right.
What
and
that tells me is
dumping
that,
it in the pool is just,
yeah.
That's
you slipped.
Less embarrassing than being in the water.
Yeah. And it just,
wow.
This smog cloud around you. What that tells me isn't that they don't put a chemical in the pool. It's that there's something wrong with your urine because it didn't set off the chemical reaction.
Okay, urine indicator dye on Wikipedia. Here's a quick thing. In 2015, a report from the National Swimming Pool Foundation called this, quote, the most common pool myth of all time,
no,
unquote,
get
with nearly
out.
Half of Americans surveyed by researchers believing that this dye actually
oh,
exists.
I'm dumb.
I mean,
I'm one of the dumb people. Oh no!
When you're a kid, it makes sense. Here's why
I'm an
I bring
adult.
It up. Here's why I bring it up. I feel like that would be the same thing for the transporter. Like, as a future child,
yeah.
You'd be told, like, if you fart in the transporter, there's a separate
we'll
beam, and everyone will know.
Yeah, the biofilter's gonna out you. Oh, that's amazing. Well, I love that we send DreamWorks for just being all about fart jokes and stuff, and that has been the intro to our show. So you're welcome, everybody.
I apologize. I'm sorry.
I do not. Let's do an email.
To the thing, everybody.
To the cargo
bay. To the shuttle
bay. Cargo bay.
To the cargo shuttle bay, which are side by side, which is why we get to choose.
Fine. Okay, yes. I was going to say no, they're not, but the ship can be whatever we want it to be.
You don't know.
You don't know. I'm the captain. I don't need to go down to the lower decks. Emails. Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. We have a non-Trek Trek email.
Yay!
Kind of.
I mean, also...
ish.
Listen, we understand that you're here for the Trek. You can send Trek emails, but thank you for responding to my desire to have something else to talk about every once in a while. But obviously, I do that anyway. We've been talking about bodily functions for far too long.
Yeah, but we always manage to find a way to segue into... sorry. I managed to find a way to segue into Star Trek. The ambassador doesn't give a shit. Okay, this is an email from Jonathan Ehrenberg.
Ooh.
No pronunciation provided, so I'm assuming that it's Jonathan and not Jonathan or Jonathan.
Just send in whatever wacky pronunciation you want in your next email, people.
Go full Key and Peele and just mess it up for me. Greetings, Captain and Honored Ambassador. First off... that's some bullshit. Well, I just get captain and you get honored ambassador. What the fuck am I?
Yay!
I got nothing. I'm just the captain. Wow.
Oh, well, you have to put the banner above your door. So you just have like the plaque that says captain.
Yeah.
My door has been like covered in stickers
honored,
and extras.
Most esteemed, exalted, first of her name, mother of shit.
That's right.
Ambassador tonight.
Every title has been plastered there somewhere. It's chaos, but I love it.
Yep. Tickler of tribbles. hoarder of horses.
Oh my god, no thank you. But
no
also
hoarders.
Okay.
You want some hoarders? An army of hoarders? That'd be amazing. Yeah. We will eventually get to this email. During your last cargo bay briefing, it is the cargo bay. That's confirmed by Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan.
You mentioned being fans of Batman the Animated Series.
Hell
so this
yeah!
is from a Sorry. Few weeks back. Hell yeah, we are. Got it all on Blu-ray, high recommend. I was curious if you were fans of another similar show during the same era, Disney's Gargoyles.
Oh my god, I loved Gargoyles!
There we go.
I apologize. I'm so sorry.
Was basically their version of a darker, literally and figuratively, animated cartoon and notably included a great voice cast, which just so happens to be essentially the entire TNG crew.
What?
I
oh
did
my god,
not
that's right!
Know
I just looked
this.
It up. Jonathan Frakes was David Xanatos.
This is incredible. This is who, I haven't got the each character, but this is the list that Jonathan's provided of who was in this show. Marina Sirtis, who's Deanna Troi, Jonathan Frakes, Will Riker, Kate Mulgrew, Captain Janeway, Michael Dorn, Worf, Brent Spiner, Data, LeVar Burton, Geordi, Colm Meaney, Miles O'Brien, Avery Brooks, Benjamin Sisko from Deep Space Nine,
oh my God.
Michelle Nichols, Sally Richardson, who is a... plays one character in an episode. John Rhys Davies, who plays Leonardo da Vinci. Frank Welker, who is the voice of Spock in Star Trek 3 and an alien creature
shit.
And nothing human. Clancy Brown, who appears in another episode. Like, it's just loads of like main Star Trek people and loads of side people as well.
Oh my god, is this... okay, hold on a second.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of fucking freaking out.
Okay.
First of all, this is now, no offense to anyone else, my most favorite email, and here's why. Because not only has it tapped into another cartoon that I like obsessively watched, but now with the link to Star Trek, is this one of the reasons I loved TNG so much?
All of these voices would have seemed very familiar to you.
It would have had a level of familiarity. And I love voice work. I love listening to how people speak and their tones. And I've always just had this sort of ear for like audio stuff.
That's so interesting. So, you would have recognized these voices from Gargoyles.
Yes, I would have.
That's awesome. So I've never seen it. I've never seen Gargoyles. I have an awareness of it, but I've never watched it.
Oh my god. I'm genuinely so, like, I kind of want to stop and think about the psychology of how this would impact other things. Because, you know, you hear a voice and then you're watching something else. You're like, this is familiar. And it does that thing where like you'll see a young person play a part and then you won't see him for like 10 years and they're on something else. You're like, where do I know this face from? And that just this like puzzle of information.
Mm-hmm. And suddenly it's not until you sometimes go back to that original piece of content that you're like, it was you.
Yeah.
You, I know you.
So the fact that this show might be the hub of one of the reasons. Now, don't get me wrong. I loved Star Trek because... TNG was really, really fun for me.
Yeah.
But I'm genuinely like, I wonder if that was part of it, this familiarity that I had. Mm-hmm. Holy shit, that's so exciting.
It's awesome, isn't it? Thank you for that, Jonathan. It makes me want to watch Gargoyles to see if I can like listen out for the voices and hear it as well. I am so happy that had a react that that inspired this reaction from you, Ambassador.
Thank That's you awesome. For this email. My mind That's is amazing. Blown. That is so fun.
Incredible. Thank you for that, Jonathan. Much appreciated. We have lots more emails to get through over the coming weeks. We may even do a mailbag episode in the feed at some point. But keep them coming in, including your recommendations for Valentine's Day love episodes. I think we have three, but it's not too late to get your suggestion in there or vote for your favorite. But yes, thanks as always for your emails. Get in touch with the show at Captain's Pod. CS on Twitter and X, and captainspod at cinemasins.com by email, and join us on Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins. Okay, Ambassador, this is our final, for now, entry in the Monster Madness medley run that we're doing. Kind of
final.
It's a
two-parter.
So we're staying with Voyager, and this episode is called Equinox. This is the so Voyager had a 7-season run. This is the finale of season 5 going into season 6.
I drive an Equinox, so my prediction for this one's going to be real interesting.
I was going to say, well, I know that I kind of got stuck on that for a second. You do drive an Equinox, so what are your predictions for this episode?
Well, we're going to be driving a vehicle of some kind, right? Like, that's an easy one.
Okay. Yeah, clearly.
Or the Starship.
It's
a
Chevy.
That one shouldn't count.
It's a future Chevy.
So I know, like, Equinox is something about, like, the sun. Like, some cycle. And I can't remember, like, because there's the fall Equinox. Oh, no. What are the equinoxes? Is it the
I think it's just the
summer.
Wait, no,
and winter? Is it winter equinox and summer equinox? Is there a spring equinox?
It's something to do with the equator, right?
I don't fucking know.
How is that going to go into a prediction?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out, because if I understand the word equinox, maybe I'll understand the episode itself.
All right.
So with obviously, like, my limited memory of what an equinox is, I'm going to say that we're going to be in some sort of cyclical loop of some kind.
Oh,
something cyclically is happening. Now that means there's a reset or something. I'm like more like a loopish. Like we're in a loopish of some kind.
Time travel shenanigans. I love it. Okay.
My more specific prediction is it has something to do with the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe at some point in time someone's going to be very worried about that.
Someone will
maybe
be
even like a little glance to a window, like with the sun in the window, and then they're like, ah.
Just
is
a little pointing to the sun.
Oh, dear.
I hope I would love it if it was Tuvok. Just like, ah! Usually has his shit together, but he just loses it over the sun.
Well, if that's going to happen, then something's gone wrong with the whole feelings, emotions.
Yeah, it's like a full moon. The equinox just fucks with Vulcans. It makes them feel all weird. Yeah, sorry, spoiling your prediction. Yeah.
Fuck, well, if that's going to happen, we're in trouble, because Vulcans and emotions equals no-no.
No. That should be on a t-shirt. The Spock wears Vulcans plus emotions equals no-no. Quit it.
We should make our own merch!
We would be amazing at it. So you still, after last week, it's an extra episode with Voyager. You excited to be with this crew and with this captain and in this different era of Trek?
Yeah, because I didn't really get a feel for the vibe of the crew camaraderie last episode.
No,
since
it
was
out.
Yeah, everyone was incapacitated and Janeway was Ramboing. Mm-hmm. She was G.I. Janing. So
yeah,
if it's a two-parter, I'm pretty confident I'm gonna have a good bit of time with the crew. Mm-hmm. And maybe learn some of the dynamics of what makes them interesting to watch.
Yeah. For the record, this is one of my
favorite.
No, this is one of my favorite. This is one of my... I'm not picking episodes I don't like. this is one of my favorite two-parters, not just of Voyager, but in all of Star Trek. I really like this story a lot for reasons that will become apparent, maybe. Okay, well, until then, let's head over to the holodeck to watch the episode. We'll see you all in 10 forward for a full debrief. Two to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode that we just watched. Most important question first, what would you like from the replicator?
Well, I just want to say on today's show, it's not immediately after. It's 45 minutes after we've watched it,
We have
long time in the live chat today, partially because I decided to eat. But anyway, I would like to have survivor rations fueled by dying aliens today, please.
I would like a BLT and a turkey platter, please. That would be my choice. And what would Harry Kim be? A haggis coffee. That's not the start of a K.
Oh.
No, this is the worst. Anyway, Ambassador, give us a synopsis.
Oh, my God. Okay, so in today's episode, there's a ship that's also been in the Delta Quadrant, and they haven't been having a good time. They've gone rogue. And Captain Janeway and her crew find them. And in an attempt to help save them from being attacked, find out that they're being attacked for a good reason. And they want to make the wrong things right by slapping that captain on the wrist and saying, no, no, we don't kill things. But because I've been on the show for a couple of years, I've been told Captain Janeway kills things too. What makes this different? I don't fucking know.
She hasn't done it yet.
She has. You're with us live as we're
Ian is retconning Voyager.
The big twist of the episode is that the bad ship people want to steal something from the good ship people.
Yeah, they do.
But don't worry, they're stopped. But don't also get too comfortable because the hologram doctor has been turned evil and he busts them out. The bad guy ship people take something really important from the good guy ship people, and they take out 7 of 9 people. We have an emergency. Cut to next time.
Dramatic ending. Evil people. Evil. Well, yeah, great synopsis. Voyager stumbles into another ship called the Equinox that has been stranded in the Delta Quadrant, and yes, they are up to some mischief. In the name of getting home, two crews in the same place, but having taken very different journeys to get there.
Ooh, I like it. I like it.
Overall thoughts and feelings, Ambassador, on part one of this fantastic two-parter.
Yeah, no pressure. This is one of your faves, you say.
No, it genuinely is. And yeah, no, it is. Yeah, I love this two-parter.
This is a great episode of Star Trek.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
In my little humble opinion.
Let's go. I didn't want to say this before, but for the first time, I actually looked up what the general consensus is about this episode, because I just watch Star Trek, and I kind of rarely actually read about what other people think, and this is held up as one of the great two-parters as well. Like, pretty much consistently, it's one of the best episodes of Voyager. It's a great two-parter in all of the franchise. It's so freaking good. The actors are so good. The story is so good. Ambassador, why did you love it so much?
What I like about you saying that is that I have hopes for next week, because anytime there's a two-parter, it's like, oh, this is great. And then like at the end, it's sort of like, oh, no, this
especially
could
when
not...
like part one has a lot of build up and stage setting to do. When it does it so well, it's like, how can part two live up to what part one set up? Yeah,
right. And part two could go bad. But if your stats are saying that it's generally enjoyed, then I have hope for next time.
Yeah, I love part two. It's a great conclusion. It's a great part two. Really, really like it.
Yeah.
But what did you like about part one? Why did it tick your boxes?
I feel like this episode does a really good job of keeping you on your toes. Mm-hmm. And I really like it when any episode of TV can do this, when it sort of takes what we assume is going to happen because we're used to the normal storylines, and then it just shifts it a little bit. So, for example, there's this. We learn maybe like about halfway through, perhaps, that bad captain and bad crew have nefarious intentions. And so it's like, oh, okay, what's going to happen with this? And when they're making their plan to steal a part from Voyager so they can get back home and leave Voyager stranded and also their morals stranded.
Mm-hmm. I said, fuck those guys.
Yeah, yeah. They're quickly caught in the hallway, and so that didn't lead anywhere, which was kind of like, oh, okay, that's not gonna happen. Cool. Obviously the franchise doesn't want Voyager to have this part stolen, because that would be like, it's not gonna go the right direction for where they want it to go.
They could have milked that and made that a whole escape sequence and running through the ship and capturing them. But I like what they do instead.
But they do that. They just bring it back in a way that has a really delicious twist, which is the evil doctor.
It's so good. It makes sense as well. It's so sick. I would have been so mad if, like, I'm kind of mad that they managed to do as much as they can do in terms of stealing the shield generator, outwitting Voyager, etc. But we'll get to that in the sins. But I do love the logic of them having their own EMH. And just the summary of this episode is what this crew has had to do to survive and, quote unquote, had to do. But the different journey they've had compared to the comparatively easy ride that Voyager has had. And they switch off the good part of their doctor and just say, go ham.
Yeah, they quote unquote, and I wrote this down, they deleted the ethical subroutines.
Yeah, they did.
So this doctor is an unethical doctor, but also he seems to have been, it's like they should have also added, and then they juiced up his loyalty functions.
Yeah.
Because his ethical subroutines has also somehow made him incredibly loyal to this particular captain. So, and maybe that's just part of it, is when you have like an EMH or whatever, that they're highly responsive to who they've been assigned to, which makes sense.
Yeah, that because it's like a computer system, isn't it? It's gonna take orders from the captain above everyone else. So yeah, I can imagine them programming that pretty quick.
Yeah,
like your moral imperative now is to get us home at any means necessary.
Yeah, like, and I think if I was to watch Voyager from the start and be enjoying the show, to see my favorite character flip evil, even though it's not technically my character, that would be a trip. Like when he leans in and goes, it's me, I was like,
you wait until next episode.
My point kind of with why I sort of enjoyed this episode, I think, as much as I did, is because at each time they reveal something to me and my brain starts to go, okay, this is where I think it's going to go next, since I can't stop myself from doing that when I watch content.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I kind of thought, oh, maybe he's going to infiltrate the Voyager, pretend to be their doctor, and that's where this is going to go. But he only does that for like a short time, and then they get back to the ship, they steal apart, and they get the fuck out of there. So that was unexpected. I didn't expect that. The other thing I really liked about this, several things I liked about this episode, but another thing that really stood out to me is we got to see some really fun sets in this episode. It's always interesting whenever they choose to do like a blown up ship. This one really worked for me from the very beginning moment. We got to see shit is fucked up.
Just ruined.
And the juxtaposition against the nice Voyager, the beautiful visuals of the ship kind of like cradling the other one, getting just the size difference.
Oh, I love that so much. Yeah, just kind of the protective mama bird thing over the Equinox.
Also get to see the advancement of storytelling that Star Trek is able to do with their CGI stuff or what's on screen but the computer is showing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big difference between TOS. It's a big difference between TNG is now we have Voyager, who their on-screen set is, we're seeing this massive screen and not only like bringing up the visual of a captain talking, you know, to the other captain on the ship, but they're also showing like, this is where this is on this one. And then it zooms over and this is where this is. And we're looking at the schematics of a ship.
Oh, in the astrometrics bay when they have like the massive thing on screen and they're talking about the shield grid thing.
Yeah.
It's such a great addition to the show. It's beautiful.
It's a different way of adding the kind of detail that a show like this doesn't always need, but when it happens, it's really exciting. Like for a lot of us, we can use, you know, our imaginations and think, oh, this ship is big. But when you're looking at a schematic that's not just a still on a screen like in TNG, but we're actually zooming into these different compartments and you're seeing all the different, you know, layers, it's got to be a fun moment for the people who created the schematic, like who actually created the ship.
This is the ship coming to life. Yeah.
Because you're getting to show part of your thought process. It's sort of like at the end of a D&D campaign when everything is over and you get to show all of your players
the amount
of detailed work that you did to get them through whatever the story is. And here we get to see it on screen in a really unique way. And I'm not used to seeing that in what we've watched so far.
Yeah.
And so I kind of imagined that that was really epic.
It's one of my Voyager genuinely is one of my favorites. I love it so much because it has the TNG vibes, but it's just a bit more updated. So we're getting into like the mid to late 90s now. So technology is catching up with ambition, and so much of like the set design and everything just looks really modern. It's really fun.
Yeah.
And like to your point about the Equinox being just beat the shit up, I was always very aware that, like, man, Voyager, imagine Voyager in its prime. Like, if it was back in the Alpha Quadrant, didn't have to worry about getting resources and running to its full capacity, how fun would that be? And then you compare it to the Equinox and you're like, oh, they've got it pretty good. Like, they still have the lights on, they've got showers, they've got food, they're all neat and tidy. And then it's so smart to compare it to this crew that has a weaker ship with fewer resources, and just the shit that they've had to go through and get to the same point as Voyager. It's such a great juxtaposition to have that on screen. Such a great moral quandary.
Clever storytelling going on here with the Prime Directive being violated, but then also the mention that you've got these two captains who, at the beginning, you kind of feel like, oh, this is going to be a merge of crews. We're going to have some new love interests. They're going to do that thing. But they're actually enemies, and they're our own people enemies. And that is a really fun spin on what would happen, like you said, if another crew went through and they just did not have a good time. They didn't have the same resources. And so you've got the bad Captain Ransom trying to, he starts to ask about the Prime Directive.
Yeah, how many times have you broken the Prime Directive?
And then cleverly shifts to, oh, I can't ally myself with them. Oh, and then also we learn that they were also sent to the Delta Quadrant through this creator person?
Oh, the caretaker. The caretaker. The same way that Voyager ended up there.
Which is kind of buried in this episode because so many other things take, you know, priority. They're under attack, you know, then of course we're being shown this, you know, bad crew versus good crew sort of thing, and they're building the tension there, but it's sort of buried in there that other people were also sent out to the Delta Quadrant. It wasn't just the Voyager. So that's an interesting bit of information, I would think.
Because we're in season five, I totally forgot that's like kind of well established, but the caretaker was literally picking people up to find a replacement for itself to look after this group of aliens. So it was like, I know I'm dying and I need a replacement caretaker. So it was just picking up ships to find a genetic match and then saying, you're no good, I'll toss you to one side. And Voyager and Equinox both got picked up and dumped in the Delta Quadrant by the same thing, which I have some sins about, but it's a great conceit that there are other Starfleet ships out there. The caretaker is what kicked off Voyager's journey into the Delta Quadrant.
So there's a moment when you have like Janeway and Ransom sort of going, we've got a lot to talk about. And that's part of why this episode sings for me is, again, they give this like a little bit of information and you assume, okay, this is going to go this direction and we're going to hear some backstory. But this is all action and it's mystery and it's subterfuge and it's, you know, playing with morals and it's asking us to find humanity and people who are doing really fucked up stuff, not just to aliens, but also to their own fellow crewmen. Like they literally just abandoned Voyager by the end. So,
hey, get over your claustrophobia and just get in that tunnel right now. But it's so, you can judge them, but it's unfair to judge them without walking in their shoes as well, because they're a Starfleet crew, they're humans. Okay, Ransom might be more morally ambiguous, even under the best of circumstances, but Janeway does some questionable shit as well. So I'm always like, would this crew have been different? Would they have ended up doing the same thing that the Equinox crew did? It's such a great moral question, because you have this experiment where you have two things that are very similar, change a couple of the variables and see how the end result is different. But what you picked out earlier is really interesting, just how Ransom is fishing. And it's like,
he's so clever.
Captain, how did you... He's so fucking sneaky. Like,
he's smart.
Such a good actor. I think it's John Savage is his name. He plays this part so freaking well. He's one of my favorite evil captains. And just picking out, just like, so yeah, have you broken the Prime Directive? Oh, no, me neither. I was just asking.
Yeah,
like, it's cool.
I was just asking.
If you have, it's cool. But I was just asking. I haven't really. And then he goes to Maxwell and he's just like, yeah, these guys are above board. We need to get out. They are. Yeah. They will not be okay with the shit that we're pulling. Because he's like, he could have brought Janeway on board.
Yeah. And it starts with her recognizing like, hey, everyone's calling you by your first name. And he's like, yeah, we've been in survival mode for a long time. And I think that the writing of this episode does a good job of helping us to understand the emotional state of the crew through the engineer female character who talks about having PTSD. She talks about just what, you know, surviving. They give mention of being on rations for a long time. I don't quite understand why they wouldn't want. Here's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. You've got people who have. It's kind of like the story of people who survive because they had to eat their fellow.
Yes.
Their fellows on a journey, you know, and they just. They did what they had to do to survive. And then they come back. And it's like they would meet another group of people and they have a way to get out of their circumstances. But these people are going to say, no, we still need to stay here and eat each other longer because it's not the way that you want to get back isn't okay.
Yeah.
And so the bad guy crew is faced with this decision like, no, we want out of our trauma and we're going to do what we can to do that. And it asks us to kind of relate to that. And I think that's a really brave part of the story.
It's the best part for me. Yeah.
You've got Janeway, like, you know, that boardroom scene where she's just like, so dude. Good. And he's like, man. And she's like, and he's like,
Starfleet, you always had a choice. And Chakotay is just like tearing I've forgotten her name, but the engineer lady is just tearing her down, just like, you had a choice. You could have stopped. And this it's the just following orders thing, isn't it? She was like, well, I wasn't kind of aware of it. I was just focusing on the job. Like, I'm just one cog in the machine. And it's easy to judge from the outside. But then when you're in it, it's like, what else are you going to do? Like, they're just, oh, man, how hard is it to make that decision that, okay, I die. We die then. Like, we're all going to die. Like, it's so, so tricky.
And the episode does a good job of, like, presenting these moral quandaries and this like really uncomfortable stuff, but then keeping the pace of the show because they're constantly under attack. And then we learn at just the right time why they're under attack.
It's so juicy. I love that so much because throughout the episode you're just like, oh, okay, alien attacking because aliens attack. And when it's unveiled that it's because there's a reason for it, they're murdering them, shoving them into the warp core for fuel. It's so juicy because you're like, course they're pissed.
It's
of
grim.
Course they're attacking you. I mean, their like self-preservation is questionable because stop attacking and leave. But I think, oh no, they were attracting them. They were attracting them deliberately.
Well, they deliberately set a trap. Yeah. And it worked.
Oh man, it's so juicy. And then just Janeway's just like, you son of a bitch. Like, you experimented on them. You kept them here. You fucking like degraded them and used them for fuel for a 0.03% increase to your engines. And he knows the numbers. She's just like, how many creatures would it take? And he's like, 63. Like, yeah, we ran the numbers. And 63, if he'd have said like 6,000, then it's like, oh, you fucking monster. But 63 is like a few dozen.
They made it to where you go, oh, would I?
That's not so bad.
It takes 63 worms to catch 200 fish to feed 500. Like, you know,
63 cats, 63 dogs. How many does it take, Command Admiral?
It's interesting. It's really, really intense to think about. And it's really, really difficult to think about.
Yeah.
But that was the part of this episode that gave it a level of reality and interest that was really great. But even that aside, I was still like, oh, okay, we're in for just a we're under attack episode, and those are fun. So that was an unexpected kind of depth. But then they just keep going. They just keep going. They're just like, yeah, no, we're not done yet because this crew is gonna fuck over Voyager.
The argument he makes that, oh yeah, I'm dying every time I kill one of them. You are so ready to get back into this. As soon as you're back on the ship, the entire crew is just like, yep, let's go. Let's start killing the aliens again immediately. That one, take it down to the engine room so fast. They just accept it. And they show it to us. Yeah. Just dies in that force field. It's like, well, I've done it once, so I may as well do 100 now because it's just as morally bad as the one that I did. And the first one is genuinely an accident. They trap it. They try to let it go and it dies. So it's like, well, we've killed one by accident. What if we just pretend we accidentally killed the rest of them? It's such a good moral dilemma because it genuinely is. It genuinely is a dilemma. I know it's obvious, don't kill things, but it is a dilemma.
Yeah, so for anyone kind of going into this place of this episode, like the idea was that on the journey, bad guys, I'm just going to call them bad guys. Bad
the nucleogenic... Sorry, you said bad guys and I thought you meant the aliens. You're right.
No,
the crew
we don't
of
know.
The Equinox.
The crew of the Equinox. Thank you. Yeah. They land on a ship and they're given supplies and, an alien race that blesses them on their journey by using this device that summons a creature that just kind of like... that's supposed to bless them and then the creature disappears. So like a little rift opens up, a little... floaty thing comes out, makes a sound, goes away, and the first officer scans it and realizes that it's like a nuclear somehow.
Yeah.
And so they barter for this device, then they experiment. So yeah, maybe the first one was an accident, but they purposefully summon it to learn more about it. And killing it was an accident, and learning that it can fuel them, maybe a happy accident, but they had their... they had their ideas. Like, they really wanted to... I can't quite buy that they're completely like, oh, it was an accidental thing that I realized that when I crushed this snail, I could make really cool dye colors out of it.
I mean, it does. It dies. I think maybe they were optimistically saying, maybe there is an ethical way to do this, if I'm being very generous. And then it accidentally dies. So they're like, well, waste not, want not. We may as well use it. But yet, everyone after that, where they're still trapping them to experiment on them, knowing the risk, it's the definition of a slippery slope. This is where a slippery slope actually makes sense, and it's why you draw the line on not experimenting on creatures without their consent.
The beginning of this episode, one of my sins that I wrote down was, why wouldn't this Captain Ransom also include in a second like follow-up, like, hey, anyone who's coming in, raise your shields. But by the end of the episode, I realized he was setting a trap for somebody too. Like he would have used anything that he could have used, no matter who they were, to get his crew back home and get out of this survival mode that they've been in for so, so long. So it was a really great episode. I definitely would recommend this one.
Yeah.
I don't even think you really need to know the crew to understand. Like you could be dropped into this pretty well. It's just a good all around episode. I think there might be some questions about like maybe the holographic doctor that might pop up. We got to see him be sent over on an away mission because he doesn't, you know, he could get into the space. So and it also was very clever. Like the scariest part of this is how smart the Equinox people are. That is the scariest part of this episode. It's not the alien. Like the monster in this one is the Equinox people.
I'm so glad you said that because last week I said it's a really fitting episode for more than one reason and that there's more than one monster. And they are the true monsters in this
yeah,
one.
it seems to be. When they are very cleverly like setting a trap to get this generator or whatever, I can't remember what it's called, off of shield generator off of Voyager for their own use. That was really clever. Their whole like idea of having to use a transporter that would trigger it all. And then we got to see this sort of back and forth play between both crews trying to outsmart each other. Even though we might
Starfleet
not be able
versus
to follow.
Starfleet.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard sometimes to follow the techno babble, but they always explain it for you. You know, they make it dumb for
you
me,
get the
which
gist
I appreciate.
Of it.
Yeah.
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 It's really, really fun because, and how often does Voyager and us as viewers of Voyager get to see Starfleet, Voyager interacting with Starfleet as well. So it's really fun to see this other Starfleet crew. And they've had to get really wily. They've had to cut corners. So I buy that they are better at thinking on their feet because they've been in panic survival mode for at least 2 years is what they've said is when it got really, really bad. Like, they lost
half
of their crew on day one. That's crippling. There
because
are 40
people
on that ship.
Because he decided to do something. Like, he was like, no, we're going to keep doing this.
his first moral choice fucked him and his crew so hard. Like, it's so sad. And they do such a good job of making me buy why they've ended up on this path. You don't have to agree with it, but you can understand why they're there. But yeah, it's so good. And like you said already, I think the pacing is so good. It trickles the mystery perfectly. It doesn't hold on to too much. It doesn't wait until the big bang cliffhanger. Like, halfway through, we know shit's going down. Two-thirds of the way through, we know exactly what's happening. And then it's full throttle into
but we didn't
the
know that they were going to win. They didn't know that they were going to take out 709. So at the end of this episode, 709 is down. And what else is like a big TBD?
The sketchy doctor is still
sketchy
on Voyager.
Is still on Voyager because he like blipped out. Yeah,
really. Like, he's, man, I love that scene so much because he like does this assessment and he's like, yeah, this isn't going our way. I'm denial knowledge and I'm going to stay here because I can be of more use on the ship rather than them figuring out that I was behind it. And our doctor is on the Equinox still with 7 of 9.
So there's two of our members over there, one of their members over here, but one that can do quite a lot of damage because we trust the doctor character.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like a mystery of how do we figure out what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is a, when he says, it's me, and his morals are gone, we still, that's a program that's lacking morals, not a person that's wrestling with morals. And so I feel
like
that the most, exactly, the most dangerous scenario is having a program with no morals, and it's on Voyager. So I'm really curious what's going to happen. I'm definitely looking forward to watching it. I give this one all pips, by the way.
All pips? It's a four-pipper for me. It's so, so good. There's a couple of other things that I wanted to call out before we move on. There was the other cliffhanger.
Our predictions, by the way. We need to talk about
predictions,
that.
Janeway gets attacked, and that's the final shot. It's my only big negative of the show, of the episode, is that I didn't need that. I don't need that final whammy of Janeway specifically being taken out. That, for me, feels a bit cheap, because I'm like, unless there was recasting news, you know, that's not going to be the way she goes out. That's not how she's going to die. So I never bought that. It was just like, oh, you don't realize how good this episode is, that you don't need that cliffhanger.
The tension.
You just need the ship under attack and then cut. Like, that takes some of it away from it for me.
Yeah, I think you're right. They could have maybe...
Make it Chakotay. Somebody that isn't the captain, or Tuvok.
Yeah, who's a disposable character that people would be like, oh, no. And Janeway is the one that you... would assume that they would never take out, especially not in that way. But would they take out the kid character? Would they
That would be super dark. But I would have, this is me rewriting Star Trek, but I would have
like...
Welcome
to this part of our show where we write every episode.
I would have portals opening with the key characters. So I would have portals opening in engineering with B'Elanna, in the nursery with Naomi, on the bridge, around some of our key players. And you still don't have to kill one of them off, but it's still just like, it gives the sense of, wow, like, everybody is at risk now, and there are just portals opening everywhere. I think that works better than seeing one of the characters get specifically hit. I don't know, it just never hits me.
Yeah, because you there's already so much they have to solve when they come back that we don't need something else. So I don't even know if it needs to end on an attack. Maybe it just ends with the, like, we saw the doctor blip out. Maybe we see him blip back on. Maybe maybe the kid walks into sick bay with like a little paper cut, and she's like, "Doctor, I've got a paper cut." And then he's just like,
"The doctor just like, I see you as fuel."
Yeah,
I'm gonna shove you into the warp core,
come
girl.
Come with me, child. Like, something like that would build a ton of tension.
I'm gonna get you nucleogenic particles. absolutely. There's a couple of other things that I wanted to call out specifically about the monster of this week, the nucleogenic aliens. That whistle is so good. The little creep, like, any monster that has like a precursor to its arrival is so clever, because you can slip that in subtly wherever you want, and it's such a great eerie way to build tension. It's so, so good.
Yeah, I had this thought too. I thought it was really clever in the lift when the Equinox's engineer, Ensign, like, heard like the whistling sound or something that's just in their lift, and then it kind of shifted to her hearing that tone. Again, just a great way for us to have empathy for this character.
Yeah, it's so traumatizing. This is so dumb, but it's one of my favorite captain moments of all time. And this has an incredible cold open with just the ship that we don't know being under attack. And just when Ransom gets up and he just bellows, "Drop shields!" It's the most epic line delivery. I just imagine him being on a boat and he's like, "Button down the hatches!" And it's just such an awesome, booming delivery that's just so over the top. And you just got this little tugboat of a ship, but you are in battle, sir. And he would have made such a good, like, main character captain if, like, he went in a different direction and he wasn't evil. I would have loved to see an entire TV show with him. At drop shields just kills me every time.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because the opening sequence with Ransom was really powerful.
Yeah.
It was on all cylinders for me when he is like, "We're going to drop shields. That's going to buy us this amount of seconds so that we can reroute this over here." And you just got this set of brilliant minds at work, and then they all grab their guns, and, you know, that was really
so good.
It was a really cool way to open it.
You know that you're in a drill that they're used to as well. Like, they hear the whistling, they're in a routine. Like, somehow I know that they've been through this already. This isn't the first time they're under attack. Incredible cold open. And no worrying about cutting to Voyager. It's just, here's the attack, end, into the opening credit. It's so, such a ballsy cold open. I love it. There was one other big moral thing I wanted to get into, and it's a quick one about Seven of Nine. So when the engineer lady who says, "I'm sorry, I guess I'm not a great role model. I guess we're not a great role model for you." And Seven of Nine was just like, "No, I learned a lot." And that kills me, because I'm like, that's a Borg drone saying, casting judgment on humans. I'm like, when the Borg are judging you, holy shit, do you know that you've gone wrong? She was like, "No, I actually learned a lot from observing you guys about what humans really are." And there's this little glance from Chakotay where he's like, yeah, humans don't come off well in this one. It's an awesome little touch of, like, Seven of Nine observing humanity. And one of the rare occasions where the Borg have one-upped, or they've one-upped the Borg in terms of, like, being cruel. It's a really, really clever way to use Seven of Nine towards the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love it.
Definitely a fun one. Well done on picking it. I was nervous as when you said it was one of your favorites, because I didn't want to not like it.
But that doesn't matter. But, like, I love Darmok, and you still hate it.
I know. But it does add pressure. In this case, I really had a great time.
That's awesome. That's so good. And how adorable is Naomi Wildman? Little Naomi, who we mentioned last week, who is the only child that's been born on Voyager. And just how much did she remind you of little Iris?
Oh.
Captain's assistant.
The way that there is something that, like, the confidence of a child is fascinating to me, because they just don't. They don't have years of
being put down
interactions with people where they're questioned and made fun of and have to build in some serious, like, personal, like,
barriers, just, like, walls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would kind of go, "Do I want to walk in there and be this, like, right now?" There's just this confidence that children have. And I always try to emulate that myself. Like, what is there to lose here? And when she walked in, I was like, who is this?
Mm-hmm.
And then she asks some permission to interrupt. And as a parent, I'm like, good for you. Thank you for asking before you just interrupt. Right? Because I'm in the stage right now where she just starts talking and getting mad that it's not her turn.
No one's paying attention to her. Yeah.
But she's getting better at it. So that was nice. I was like, look at that. Look at this kid who's following protocol. That's
whipped
nice.
Whipped into shape already. Yeah.
And then she kind of offers her services. And my just favorite part adorable. Of that wasn't the kid necessarily. It was how accepted she was by Chakotay and Harry.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they just sort of lovingly looked at her, let her do her thing and then go. I thought that was awesome, because dismissing children before they have a chance to do something that makes them happy really has some detrimental effects, not only on the kid, but on you too, because it challenges you to endure the annoyance of a child.
You know, Picard and Riker would have been like, fuck off, kid. Like, get out of here. Stop it.
Yeah.
But they're so
don't get me wrong. Children in TV shows are like a hit or miss at points for me.
She's great, though.
But I didn't know she was there. And so And I also think it's important for this show to have an understanding that when they're abandoning Voyager, they're also abandoning a child. They're also
the choice
to make them dead in the water, so to speak, and under attack, potentially. They're like, they're smart, they're gonna figure it out. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, they know that there is a chance that everyone on the ship is gonna die because they've stolen something that they need to protect themselves.
They've become experts at rationalizing anything. They can rationalize mass murder. They're okay with leaving Voyager behind.
And a child, and mm-hmm. that also helps us to distance ourselves from the Equinox crew, who we are empathetic towards in some ways, but then also going, no, you're actively making choices, and it's not a computer program making a choice. It's mm-hmm. a human deciding that instead of riding it out on a ship that has a lot of resources that they didn't have before, instead of going that route, they're super okay with going their own route, killing beings on the way to do it, and potentially killing an entire ship of other people that are in Starfleet. So by the end of this episode, there's no question.
Irredeemable.
I don't really care what happens to these people anymore.
Yeah, no, totally agree. I'm with you.
Yeah.
So really quickly, predictions. I love how random the predictions get when you just have no idea. Now, for some reason, the episode's called Equinox, and you thought it was going to be about the sun or about equinoxes or that somebody would be worried about the sun. Why would you think that? Why wouldn't you guess it was the name of a ship?
I know. I would have never thought about that, even though this is totally a show about fucking ships and shit.
So the sun wasn't involved at all, I'm afraid. And your other prediction was that a cyclical loop is happening because of like the cycle of an equinox, etc. No,
not really.
I'm sorry, but a great swing. I really enjoyed it. And specifically, somebody would be worried about the sun or pointing out the window.
Out the window like this.
People were concerned, but they did not happen. I apologize.
No. There wasn't even looking at anyone. It was like, oh, look at that. It was mostly looking up at rifts going, oh, fuck. And then shooting it.
No.
But before we go, I also want to say, like, I liked the design of the aliens.
Yeah.
Because we had the CGI-ness, which I thought looked great, by the way. Like last week, we were not so great. But this was great.
Much better. Probably because the lighting was different. Like it's really, really dark. And they move around really, really fast. But even when it's in that stasis thing, it looks really, really good. I think they did a great job.
But the physical alien that they had, like we got to see it sort of evolve. So the very first time you see it, it just zooms through. And I likened it to the Ghostbuster ghost, just kind of like zooming through.
Yes.
But then by the end, we're seeing their full form. We got to see it come out of the sky in the flashback to how they were able to summon them.
Yeah.
And then the other part of it was, the physical form on their experiment, like their experimenting.
Oh, yeah, when it was actually dead. Yeah.
When it was dead and it had kind of almost like cocooned on itself or something. It was very, very interesting. So, yes, it's dark and that really helps with some of the details, but that's fine. I thought that the alien work on this one was really good. I'm glad that we came back to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're doing a monster run and we barely talked. But no, we talked about the monsters a lot in this episode. We know who the monsters were, you handsome bastard.
He's got a great voice, by the way.
Incredible voice. Like, so unique.
What is the actor's name?
John Savage.
What has he done?
I, off the top of my head, do not know, to be completely honest. But I know that he's incredible. He's so good. Drop shields!
I feel like I've heard his... Maybe he just has one of those voices that's sort of like the commercial for the movie. Like,
in a world this summer... Just when you thought you couldn't fuck up anymore, shove aliens into your warp core.
Is that what we're calling it?
Okay, with that, let's head over to engineering to kind of shove some aliens into the plasma vents and see if we can get home quicker and do some sins. Good night, everyone.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sim range and remind ourselves that no TV show or two-parter is without sin. Even our beloved Star Trek.
Wow, and that was quite the dramatic pause.
There it was. It's a cliffhanger. You go first, Ambassador.
You know, I really didn't write a ton down. There was one moment, though, that I the first thing that pops to my head. So Voyager, they sent a lot of people onto this ship, and I felt like that was kind of dumb. They sent a lot of their own crew to this busted, dusted, under attack, fucked up Equinox.
Yeah. And they blew the budget and couldn't afford any more extras.
And then they all split up. They're like, B'Elanna, you stay here and just...
Seven of Nine, touch, you go that way.
Touch that weird thing there and... Okay, you know. And so I just feel like that was really wrong. Like, you go in and you assess the situation and you don't even know if what's happening. I don't know.
Yeah. You should always be paired. Especially on a ship that's completely broken. 100%. The captain should not be there.
Yeah,
to begin with at all.
It was very confusing concerning. To me. There wasn't like a rescue team, or it should have been like a secure. Usually it's the security team is what I've noticed.
Yes.
They usually send over the security guys.
Worf, Data, Geordi.
Yeah.
If you need to. Yeah.
I don't know if maybe Voyager doesn't have that because they're in survival mode. I don't know.
Yeah, a bit more loosey-goosey.
But fucking Neelix is there.
Yeah, there's no need for Neelix to be on this away mission. Why do you need the fucking morale officer? Just rub it in. Just like, come over and have some stew.
Who does nothing else the entire episode? He literally goes over and he finds somebody that's really traumatized, tries to kill him, and then they knock him out and then puts a little device on his neck.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing he does.
He did not need to be that. Yeah. He knows a bit of first aid, but that's just no need. You're gonna love my first sin. We are yet to have any confirmation that Captain Rudy Ransom is at all related to Commander Jack Ransom from Lower Decks.
I wondered.
Ransom. Same last name. And they have to be related. There's no way they're not.
Like, you don't think so? Yeah, maybe.
Brothers,
okay, well, let's
they
find
have
out.
To, they have to be related. It hasn't been, as to my knowledge, I'm happily to be proved wrong, but it has not been confirmed by Mike McMahon or anybody that they're actually related. But they, I'm expecting that to be like a big reveal at some point that Ransom is related to Rudy Ransom.
Well, I mean, they do have very similar features.
Yeah. And I don't, it wouldn't be like a father-son thing. It could be like uncle, nephew. It could be brothers, could be cousins. But yeah, I'm looking forward to there being a link of some sort.
Another big sin, like a sin for me, is this episode kind of ended, I think, with the female officer that's got like claustrophobia or something.
Oh, the engineer, yeah.
Or, towards the end of it, she says something to 709 like, you wanted to know about humanity. Blah, 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 blah. She wasn't there for that conversation. That
Ensign Gilmore.
709 said that to Captain Janeway before they even went to the Equinox. So, yes, 709 did say that, but unless she decided to tell her that at some point, there's no way for this officer. She wasn't even rescued yet, so she wasn't privy to that conversation.
That's a great point. She wasn't even. Yeah, she wasn't. They hadn't even met the Equinox yet. They just knew that that was their destination. So that's. That's a classic case of we really want this line to happen between these two people, but it doesn't really make sense. Unless, of course, you can explain it away by they had an off-screen conversation, but it feels jarring in the episode. Yeah, for sure. That's a great point. I like that. We'd seen that. I got really frustrated by Janeway at the beginning of this episode because she turns up and just there is zero fucking pace about rescuing the Equinox. They're just like, Neelix is like, what's happening to the shields? And everyone's like, oh, they appear to be under attack. Well, no shit. What do you think the distress signal was? Of course they're under attack. But there's no ships nearby firing phasers. Oh, I guess they're okay then. And then they open comms. And Janeway's just like, hi, Ransom, how you doing? And Ransom is just like, shields, shields, we need, extend your shields. And Janeway again says, are you under attack? And he's just like, shields, extend them now. Like, why so many questions? Where is your urgency? Get in there, extend your shields and help them. No wonder they're pissed.
They don't. Yeah, they're not pissed. They're not pissed. If they were, if they had discovered, if Equinox had discovered that Voyager was in the same moral sphere as them,
yeah,
they would all be buddies right now.
Yeah, exactly.
They'd all be fucking.
Just insane. They'd be fucking.
What was another sin of mine? Oh, okay. So then they get onto Voyager and they're walking around and they're you know, discovering people. A really good amount of time of this episode is spent in that moment of discovery. Mm. Where they're taking people off of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's fine. That's fine. But they end up on the bridge, and I don't remember who it was, but somebody finds the first officer, kind of like at the comm, towards the front of the camera.
Oh, Maxwell. Yeah.
Yeah, Max or whatever.
Titus Weaving.
And they like lift him up whatever. To see if he's still alive, and he's sort of like groggy, and then they just straight up shine a flashlight right in his eyes.
How's that concussion, buddy? He should have vomited on them.
There's got to be a better way.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like the helmets that shine the lights directly into people's
into
eyes,
your eyes,
so that we, the audience, can see them. But
just
yeah,
rude.
We can't. They can't see shit. That's amazing. Yeah. Sin removal for Titus Welliver, John Savage, and Olivia something.
Olivia,
fix
something.
It in post. Olivia Birkeland, who is Ensign Gilmore. Forgiving performances are great. I think it's absolutely insane levels of bullshit that Voyager and Equinox are anywhere near each other. They were brought to the Delta Quadrant at different points. Yes, they're both plotting the same course home. It is insane that Voyager is anywhere in range. And yes, communications can go really far, so they could have picked up the distress call. But they are a matter of hours away from the Equinox. They're not even like days, weeks, months away. They're not hearing this distress call way after the fact. They are hours away.
14 it's days after the fact.
Fucking
14 hours.
Yeah, thank you. Hours. It is insane how lucky it is that they are anywhere near each other. Space is fucking huge. I don't know if I've mentioned it before on the show. Space is big.
Yeah.
Insane.
You know, the convenience of that, the convenience of the relationship. Like, what are the odds that...
of all the people!
But
it's
not
your
only, like...
boyfriend.
Maybe that is a larger odd, because Starfleet's kind of small. So, you know, maybe there's statistic...
Yeah,
like,
maybe
statistically,
Maxwell
you're
going to
run into
lot.
Somebody.
Yeah.
But how do you run into somebody that you have been with in the past, mm-hmm. but also taught you a very specific maneuver that comes in handy at the end of the episode.
Just insane. Just...
He pulls a BLT and she's all like, what?
Didn't see it coming. Like, she should, that should
clever.
Have been the last trick that he pulled, because he would have been like, oh, she'll see this coming. Like,
yeah.
He should have known not to use the quadratic equation or whatever it is.
I wrote it down, but I do have to love the turkey platter situation, because
it's so good.
Like, that was really fun.
That was an incredible burn. Just like, come on, turkey platter.
Are they like in a love situation, like B'Elanna and Harry and Tom? Like, are they?
Well, yes. Oh, okay. Tom and Harry are deeply in love, and were
cool.
A much better partnership than Tom and B'Elanna. 100%. They should have got together.
They're, like, they're all bi together. Like, they're all.
They absolutely should have been. 100%.
Oh, they're not.
They're not. No.
Oh.
I wish. Honestly, Thomas and Harry.
What am I thinking? They would have had that on in the 90s. What am I thinking?
Oh,
never
absolutely
mind.
Not.
I knew
are
the
you
answer
kidding?
To that. Sorry.
Yeah. Not a chance.
No. Because it was kind of inferred. She's like, these are my guys. And I'm like, fuck yeah.
Let's go. The first thruple on TV. Like, that would have been incredible. Star Trek should do that. But no, I mean, Tom is a toxic friend, a toxic boyfriend. He's toxic in general. But I think that him and Harry make a better relationship than Tom and B'Elanna. But yeah, Tom and B'Elanna are together at this point. Yes. That was one of my sins, actually. The bullshit jealousy cliche nonsense of jealous. I'm not jealous. And it doesn't add anything to the story. Like, it's, you can have all of that. You can have, like, Maxwell trying to seduce B'Elanna and get into her quarters without the Tom being jealous stuff as well. It's just like, oh, it's the 90s. I guess it's friends. So I guess they're jealous of everything. Like, that's sin. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm glad that I'm glad that the episode didn't dig into that too deeply.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, they didn't spend more time on it.
And the twist on it was that Max isn't actually looking for romance. Well, he might be, because it's sort of indicated by the end in that weird, like, don't worry, Max, there's tons of bitches to bang on Earth when we get back.
You'll get some hoes back home.
Oh, that was such a... I would ding the fuck out of that. But anyway...
Right. Just because they're evil doesn't mean they're womanizers.
The idea is that Max is trying to understand B'Elanna for her intel.
Yeah, that, totally get it. Yeah.
And distract her from downloading information on the panel that she caught him on, that he shouldn't have been on. So it changed it from being like a love interest triangle thing to being more about, again, like the subterfuge part of it. So
yeah, totally works. Yeah.
I appreciated that angle, I think, more than I realized.
Yeah. No, I think it's great for that. It just annoys me that Tom is being Tom, but I'm not a big fan of
I really didn't get to see a lot of Tom in this one. He definitely came across as like the convenient boyfriend.
Yeah. Jealous? I'm not jealous. Come on, turkey platter. So good. That's such a like a sitcom.
So
like,
good.
Turkey platter. TP. Nice.
Yeah. I
nice Harry.
I didn't follow that until you were trying to do the Harry whatever earlier.
Harry. Somebody in the chat said a good one. I've immediately forgot. Oh, Hershey Kiss.
Hershey Kiss. That'd be great.
Connected to that one, actually, B'Elanna lets Max get away with that download, and the computer lets Max get away with that download way too easily.
And yes, B'Elanna probably knows the sounds of those beep, boop, 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 so
and
well.
She knows he's a sketchy dude. Like,
yeah, he reaches for the thing and then it makes a sound. Like, she knows he just pressed a button.
Why does he need the tricorder out? Like, that tricorder being there is sketchy as fuck. And it would have been a great moment later in the episode for B'Elanna to go, I had a hunch, I followed up on it, and this is what Max was doing.
I was hoping that was going to happen, but it just cut away.
It just completely ignored it. B'Elanna gets one. And it's totally within B'Elanna's character. She's a fucking smart person. Like, she should have dug into that, and it would have been a great little addition to figuring out the plan.
This is the perfect time to say the amount of times the live chat has just sinned the existence of Neelix gives me a lot of things to think about.
No one
and
likes Neelix.
I feel
Neelix.
Like I'm missing like a general hatred of a character, because I think Neelix is interesting personally, but maybe I haven't seen him enough to be annoyed by him yet.
He is very annoying in season one and two, and he gets annoying in some specific episodes, but overall, he's harmless. I think people dislike him for the same reason they dislike Wesley. He's a bit of a goody two shoes, prodigal son, wants to do well, goody goody without much depth until you get to like kind of later seasons. But and he generally just makes a nuisance of himself. And he's really creepy with Kes in the first couple seasons as well.
Oh, I remember you saying that, yeah.
Yeah, that's really problematic.
I personally don't like him, honestly. I don't have anything against him yet, but I guess we'll see as time goes on. As far as my sins go, like I was writing some and then they would unwind, which happens a lot when we do our content.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that I was impressed by is like in this episode, there's like phasers firing and it immediately cuts over like, hey, we got phaser fire. I'm like, we actually are being shown a crew that's very much aware of system shifting. And there's even like a moment between Tuvok.
Oh, when they're escaping. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And 7 of 9, when they're they're just like very, very hyper aware. So anything that I was writing about, I was preparing to write about, usually that's something that they let go for the story so things progress. Yeah. But this time they were like, our crew is catching it. It's just that their crew is also equally smart
just
and like
a little bit further ahead. Yeah, I love that. The phases are detected. 7 of 9 detects that the science lab should be vented by now, but isn't. Yeah, it's really, really smart.
So very, very, very cool.
I love how like Tuvok is Vulcan-splaining. Sometimes you can be too efficient, and that is the enemy of the good. And it's ever just like, booyah, I found out the mystery, motherfucker. That's why the police, they're being sketchy, and we can't go over there. Who's too efficient now? I mean, he didn't say any of that, but...
I am tempted, because I'm out of sins, to go into the live chat, so... How many more sins do you have?
The biggest one for me is the math and engineering on how killing these aliens is going to get them home. So this is improving their warp efficiency. And the show is deliberately vague about this. It gives them more speed, more efficiency. But somehow, 63 of these aliens will get them home in a couple of days. I don't know how that's happening. Because they still have a maximum top speed. They're not opening wormholes. I don't know how they're exceeding warp 10 or whatever by using 63 aliens. Like Ransom says, like, we'll be home next week. And I don't know how that's working with these aliens, unless it's a completely different type of space travel. It just, that math doesn't add up to me. But it's great because 63 is such a good number.
Yeah.
So I justify it's a lot, but it ain't a lot.
Yeah. It's a sacrifice. You know, you're like, you're sacrificing another thing that you're not wanting to know about. You're not wanting to understand what you're doing to an alien. Like, if that alien race only has 64 that's left, you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, they're not doing 67? Anything to figure out what that looks like. And from my understanding, they could have done a little more research before starting off on the dead alien engine that they're building.
They didn't ask the questions. I think my last one that I had was, I just think all of the alarms should have gone off when Not Doctor is back on the ship with the thing, like an alarm bell that says, by the way, this hologram that operates on people, the morals aren't working. This part of its program has been switched off. Ding, 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 ding. Don't let this guy operate on your brain.
Right.
That really should have been raising all the flags.
Yeah, there has to be another quote-unquote subroutine that scans the existing quote-unquote subroutines or whatever they're called. Like,
you would think.
There needs to be a backup plan for something like this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, but I guess we did see in other episodes, like, where Data, he got away with being very abnormal without anyone really noticing.
But it's just that the EMH is integrated into the ship's computer. Like, it is in there. It's basically you've got a virus. Like,
that's
the ship has a virus that there's no alarm bells going off. Okay, well, that's it from me, Ambassador. Anything else you want to pull up before we wrap it up? Well, I am so happy you loved that episode. It genuinely warms my heart that one of my absolute favorites is so high up in, like, the episodes that
we
watched. Like, you really, really enjoyed it.
It was super great. Yeah.
So good. It's always a risk doing two-parters, because if the first part sucks, you're like, oh, shit. Whoopsie doodle. But yeah, absolutely love that. We love getting your emails. Please send us some more Valentine's Day recommendations. We are narrowing down what we're going to go for, and it's going to be so much fun. I cannot wait.
I am nervous, but I'm excited.
Next week, we have Equinox Part 2, and then we'll be getting into our unconventional love episodes for a few weeks. So send us an email at CaptainsPodCS on Twitter/X, CaptainsPod@CinemaSins.com, and the Discord, discord.gg/CinemaSins. Get in touch with us, we love talking. And until next week, I'm Captain Ian, and drop shields from me.
And there are times when perfection hinders efficiency.
I knew it. I wish I'd written down what you were going to do. So perfect. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through CaptainsPod@CinemaSins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
So, do you ever, like, talk to yourself while you get ready?
No. I realize that I've gone maybe 2 or 3 days without talking sometimes. But I don't have a lot of reason to talk outside my head. So I might, like, I'll have thoughts, obviously. But yeah, I don't talk to myself. I know you do. As soon as you turn the recording on, you're giving me absolute gold to put in the outtakes.
I'm glad it's useful. Open it. Close that one. Close that one. Open that one. Archive that one. Check these. Is that? Anything there? Nope. Okay. Moving on. Dear self. please remember to order a new mouse pad. A captain's pod. Oh, we're watching Voyager again today. Oh, this is the two-parter today. Oh, Jiminy Criminy. Don't be in a bad mood, Danae. Don't be in a bad mood. Remind me about that later. I don't want to update that now. I don't want to update it now. Oh, fuck. I literally can't click on remind me. Yes. Fuck. Hello?
Hi.
Why are you looking guilty?
No.
That
sounds like you're projecting. I wasn't feeling guilty at all. Why are you feeling guilty?
So this morning I was like, you know, same as every day. I have a child to care for and, you know, feed and get dressed. And then I have myself with whatever time I have left over. That becomes my time. And depending on the severity of the week, like as far as how pressed for time I am, that'll determine various things like, have I bathed? Have I brushed my hair, etc. So this morning, I pretended like I had like a little YouTube channel or like an audience of some kind that was interested in my here's how to get ready fixing yesterday's makeup that is still plastered to your face and make it look fresh tutorial.
I know that feeling. Yeah,
I had that. Oh, and also the gross, greasy hair and no clean clothes tutorial. I did that out loud while I was getting ready today.
Nice. That's cool. Did you record it?
My audience was really, really fantastic because it's like in my imagination. They were very pleased with the result. Yeah, I was very helpful.
Are you tempted to actually record it or this just motivates you to do it? Or it gives you something to do? Because I usually listen to a podcast. When I'm fixing my makeup, I usually have like something on in the back. I don't enjoy being alone with my own thoughts.
Hey, do you want to just not do the show today and play Minecraft?
I would love to play Minecraft. Yeah, that would be amazing. I've had a terrible morning. So yeah, that would be, I would love to just not do anything today and play Minecraft.
Do you have the poops?
I don't have the poops, no, but I had a terrible, terrible night's sleep. I actually had a really great poop earlier. It was...
That
Very
was the best
satisfying.
Part of your day?
Yeah, just slipped right
That's
out.
That's nice. That's nice. I was pooping while I was on the phone this morning, and I had this thought, like, how many people are on a phone conversation while pooping and the other person doesn't know it?
I don't think it's that often because I've thought about this. I've thought about how much I can get away with doing that, and I usually land on no because the acoustics in the bathroom are always different. Like, you know... there's always like that echoiness to it. So I think it's not easy to tell, but there are clues. And an observant person like Aaron Dicer will immediately know that I'm talking to him on the toilet. And the amazing thing is he wouldn't care. But I just know that you can tell.
Okay. And I did wonder, not because there was noise, like bodily function noises, because I'm kind enough to not have somebody... I'm not mic'd up during that part of my bathroom routine. But like, you know, when I'm just like in that in-between time where I'm like, okay, body, are we done yet? And I just need to be efficient with my time.
Okay.
You know, and then I make a phone call. That's
But don't
and
you
I made
spend
a phone
that
call.
Time wiping?
I mean, listen, sometimes you just have to sit there for a minute and kind of just like figure it out.
Yeah.
At least whenever you're me, that's what you have to do. So I'm just waiting for my body to decide, are we done? You know?
Yeah.
And because of the chaos of my life, I'm like, I have 5 minutes that before I have to go to the show, 2 to 3 of which could just be sitting here and I can make a quick phone call.
Yeah.
So I did. I was very efficient.
Nice.
It was a very interesting experience.
Did you feel bad about it? Did you feel like you were violating the person on the other end of the phone?
No, I mean, I wondered if they knew, like, could they hear me? Like taking the toilet paper off of the roll, I was trying to be extra quiet at that point. Like you said, there's probably clues or whatever.
Yeah, because it's not just the echoiness; it's the accidental plop, it's the splash. It's
I wasn't mic'd during that part though, so it's just
you were
the
muted.
It was the buffer time afterwards. You see,
gotcha.
Yeah, hopefully she was just focused on booking my dental cleaning.
Yeah, I would hope so, and that's I think if anybody, a dental hygienist is going to appreciate things happening in the bathroom. Like they work in a bathroom. Like you go into a dentist place and it is essentially a bathroom.
Yeah.
But a very hygienic one.
Yeah. It's just teeth dust everywhere.
Yeah. Just powdered teeth. That's how that works. Just everywhere. The last time I went in last Thursday, they had, I mean, she was just there for the day, obviously, but it was a trainee nurse that was training and observing. So I had four people in this room with me. I had a trainee hygienist, I had the regular hygienist, I had my dentist, and a trainee dentist. And she was so awkward. I don't know if it was literally her first day observing a human, but she was just like almost like they give you like the mouthwash when you're finished, and she bowed her head and gave it to me like, are you either ducking or you know that I've been through some shit? And then just like, I'm so sorry. And just like kind of bowed and offered up the mouthwash to me, like, this will cure what ails you, sir.
That reminds me about when I had given childbirth and they walked in all of those nursing students to just see the wreckage of my undercarriage.
It's like, this is how you don't want it to end up, students.
Look at Ian's mouth. Yeah. This is this. Yes. Look at Danae's undercarriage. This is this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can we stop talking about body function now?
Yeah, we can. That's fine. We can move on from that.
That's my fault. It's my bad. I apologize.
This happens a lot.
I'm sorry.
Like, Danae will initiate it and then bail. And I respect it. That's
regret.
Fine. Yeah. Oh, quick follow up on last week. You didn't die when the dog got picked up because you're here.
I didn't die.
We left that on a cliffhanger. Everybody thought, well, not everybody. I was convinced you were going to die. And people in the chat supported me and said that I was doing my due diligence. And yeah.
It's nice to have a friend that is concerned about the safety of you know, me, my daughter, anyone really.
Hmm.
So thank you. Thank you for that.
Of course.
Well, I mean, there was another adult in the house, so it would have been a fight for sure.
Would it?
What do you mean?
I don't see Justin as a fighter.
Justin, I think like his instinct would be fight or flight, but because he's not trained, if he goes into fight, he would just hurt everybody because he has no control.
Just arms swinging
just,
everywhere.
Yeah, just flailing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As Twix gets thrown across the room.
Also, the lady that came to pick up the dog was probably 60-some years old, a smoker, you know.
Important.
So.
Yeah, you can take her. Even on a bad day, you can take her.
Yeah, I watched her pull into the driveway and I was, you know, because I assess everyone, and whether it's for massage therapy and watching like, oh, you know, your neck is frozen or whatever. But this time I was sizing her up for danger.
Mm, very little detected.
Yeah, I knew once she pulled up in, you know, her vehicle and stepped out, I was like, oh, I got her. She had lady purse and everything.
Now I judge her for coming to your house unattended. I should be her friend and warn her. This person just kidnapped your dog, and now you're going to their house. Bad move, lady.
I would meet in a public park. If it was my dog, I'd say, meet me at the parking lot, and, you know,
absolutely.
We'll exchange a dog there. The Gargoyles show is essentially they come to life in modern day, like, New York or something like that. It's like a big city, and they kind of become the protectors of
That's amazing.
Night.
These are the, like, decorative gargoyles that are already on the buildings?
Yeah.
Or they
Something. Let me quickly scroll, because I was looking at pictures. Let's see. Oh, here's like a quick. After spending 1,000 years in an enchanted, petrified state, the gargoyles, who have been transported from medieval Scotland, are reawakened in modern day New York City. There it is. And take
that
on the role of the city's secret nighttime protectors.
Because when you said 1,000 years, I was like, well, that rules out all of America then. No, it wasn't New York. Not 1,000 years ago.
I don't remember like specific episodes or plot points. I recognize the images that I'm seeing, you know, of the characters and everything, but I haven't watched it in so long. It's like when I decided to watch Gummy Bears, the Disney's Gummy Bears, because Iris, I thought, oh, I wonder if she'll like this, and all of a sudden I'm like, magic and mystery, you're part of it. I'm like, where the fuck does this song live in my conscience? Like, how am I accessing lyrics?
Why are you taking
lyrics?
Up valuable RAM in my brain? Why
it's
do
so
I
crazy.
Still know this? So last week, I said that then the cells move up and down for no reason. And I'm not accepting this reason. Phil says, Voyager's nacelles move from a production standpoint to show the ship is at warp other than the stars moving. We have the stars moving. That's fine. That's fine. And also, I want people to say, like, we're at war, going to section 0045, warp factor 9.
That's my favorite part. The da-da-da-da-da-da.
I always think it is.
Are we wearing dumb hats today?
Yeah.
I heard it when it came out. It didn't mean for it to be that judgy. I'm sorry.
Keep my hat's name out of your mouth.
Actually, I like that hat.
You should.
It's pretty incredible.
This is absolutely a U hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's very vaginal in the front. I don't like that.
What the fuck does your vagina look like? What do you mean? You mean that bit? We can't do this live.
I apologize. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Quite. What the fuck? What the actual fuck, Danae? Jesus Christ. Wait, whoa. Just looked at the list of best worst starships, and the number one worst is D-Deridex. What the who put that fucking list together? What a dick. They have no idea. The D-Deridex.
Oh, do you have... You have it. This guy.
This is the D-Deridex. It's fucking beautiful. Are you kidding me? That's one of the greatest alien design ships ever. Look at it. It is a fucking eagle. It is it is beautiful. Look at that shit. How the fuck is that on that list? That shouldn't even know that list exists. That's insane.
I will say, is that list based on like use of space? Because
doesn't matter. Any criteria, this ship wins. All of them. All of the criteria.
I'm going to pull this one up from David Ellis in the chat, who says, if the caretaker brought the Equinox to the Delta Quadrant, how is it that their first encounter was with an alien race Voyager never met? You'd think the Kazon would be their first encounter.
Yeah, I assumed the... So what happens with Voyager is that they all get like experimented on and scanned and then sent back to the ship, if I remember rightly, or most of them do. And Voyager could, in theory, have gone on its way, but it kind of got sucked into the mystery. I'm guessing that Ransom just figured out that he was outmatched and the Equinox couldn't hold its own against the caretaker and left. And just like, you know what, let's just set a course, let's go home. And maybe the first creatures they met after that were these aliens.
So this thing here is not being specific enough.
Yeah, but there's enough there where we could fill in the gaps. But you're right, they should have met. They definitely should have met the Kazon at some point, the discount Klingons.
Sin removal for Olivia Birkeland. That's Gilmore's portrayal of PTSD from very recent trauma.
Yeah.
That said, the sin is that there's really such a thing as a little, just a little. I got a little bit of PTSD. Playing.
Just a little bit. She does like that little like chest holding pressure thing. Like she does a great interpretation of it, of that anxiety.
The thing that I noticed about her specific, like when she was talking about it, was such a high level of awareness of what she was going through. And I just kept thinking like, this is probably because they're talking about it a lot. And it's refreshing to hear someone say, this is what I'm struggling with. And then watch them struggle and then correct it. Like she stops the lift, she gets off the lift, and Chakotay is just like, yeah, let's walk. And I thought that was a really nice moment.
The power of boners, man. It will make you very compassionate.
I didn't pick that up from Chakotay though. Like he seemed very professional. He actually was keeping her at a distance. He's like, you're going to have to go back to your ship. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I don't want to. And he's like, you know, that's not cool to say. That's your ship.
Of course, like, of course you want the shiny ship. You kind of look like a bit of a dick abandoning your crew.
If he wanted her to stay, he would have been like, yeah, you should, you know, get a transfer, babe. Like they would have written it that way. So I didn't get that Chakotay was hitting on her. But I liked that moment because she talked about her trauma and in a very direct, matter-of-fact way. A level of self-awareness that is refreshing, and I liked that part. Sin, the they were only following orders excuse. Sin removal. Janeway doesn't accept that they were only following orders excuse, never even considered it.
I do like, it's such a hideously awkward moment when they're in the briefing thing and they're deciding to abandon the Equinox, and Ransom's just like, well, that was written in the Alpha Quadrant. I don't know how much weight that protocol has here. And Janeway's just like, the protocol stands.
Like, I love that part.
We're doing this. We're abandoning the Equinox. Get on my ship, bitch.
Yeah, I like that part.
She's already looked it up. Just like, it's me. I'm the captain. It's me.
I don't know how to explain it without it sounding really cheesy and lame-ish, but watching a woman in power is really cool.
It's really, really cool. And I love that they don't dive too much into the female captain thing. Ransom's got his own plans, whatever. But it's a very weak argument that he's putting up, and he knows it. And he does give in. Like, it's not... She's the captain. That's it. Bottom line.
Yeah, it was very clever. The show isn't spending its time about sexism.
No.
There might be an undertone of it, but it wasn't intentional, I don't think, in this particular episode.
Yeah, the conceit is that by, and this is one of the probably the issues, is that the conceit is that by this time in the future, we've moved past it, which means you rarely have to deal with specific sexism, because the idea is that 200 years from now, we don't see gender in that way. It doesn't matter. So you have to deal with it as an allegory. So you have to find a replacement for gender to have that discussion, or else it's like, why are we still talking about gender in the 2400s? That's fucking depressing.
Yeah, it really is depressing to think about that. Sin! Shutting off the doctor's mobile emitter is as easy as just smacking it with a pad. Another great reason to never send him on away missions.
Correct. It's not the first time it happens. It's just
whack.
Thwack, done. Like, just, it's so bad. Like, I always want it to, like, not fall off. Just, like, it's so dumb. So, so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And why doesn't it just reproject? Like, because he's in the emitter. So why doesn't it just, I mean, where else is he?
So wait,
he
hold
has
on,
to
hold
be
on.
In the emitter.
Yeah. How does he transfer to the...
The doctor must have, the evil doctor must have downloaded him and then done it. And then took the emitter. But we don't see that.
Me. Here's a question from Sarah. Does the EMH need a flashlight?
He is light. Very good point. He is light.
Does he need it? No.
I don't think so.
I don't think. I guess if he wants to direct the light, like, he is light, but...
But his optical receptors, like, he shouldn't... I don't know. Yeah, you're right. He shouldn't need it.
How are Starfleet personnel able to pilot ships going more than a quarter of the speed of light?
These ships do not need pilots. They have button presses. It's just set a course and the computer does the work. Like, it's cool, but we should not be manually steering the things the size of D-Derek's warbirds. Size of cities. Like, it's just insane. You just got to remember, faster than a light, no left, no right.
I'm not sure why, but I'm not as bothered by these CGI creatures as I was with the Macrocosm. They're not discernibly different in quality. Maybe the fact that this is better episode helps me overlook it. I think they are better though.
I think they are better. It is a better episode, and honestly, Macrocosm has some interesting lighting. Like, you can really see the creatures to their detriment, but this has some spooky lighting that is forgiving, I think.
Oh.